Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcast on iTunes.
Hey, good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
I was reading the New York Times.
You were reading?
I was. And there's an article there by Eric Asimov.
Is it a holiday?
That's funny. there's an article in there by Eric Asimov, who often writes about wine for the Times. Eric's been a guest on the show. And I thought it was really great. It talked about the shortage of sommeliers in America. Now, before you all yawn out there and turn off the radio, the sommelier, wine knowledgeable people, and I know there are a lot of people in the business who listen to this show, sommeliers are very much in demand. Now, what there's a glut of is people who know a little bit about wine who claim to be sommeliers.
And pretend to know a lot about wine.
And we see a lot of that. And here he writes about some interesting things, and he raises some topics. And in an era where our business is becoming increasingly professional and where our country has many more wine lovers, from the people who know a lot and collect and read to the people who are just interested in it.
But you speak of, you know, these so-called sommeliers that are spattered across the country right now. But every once in a while, I'll have a customer come in, and I'll know that they're quizzing me, that they're actually quizzing me to make sure that they should take my advice or not.
Yeah, and people ask. I will often, if I'm out, I'll ask a sommelier, because, I mean, Mark and I know a lot about wine, but, I mean, I have friends who are master sommeliers, which is the highest level of master sommelier and master of wine are the highest level of degree you can get in our field. And, you know, when we're out with them, they'll always ask the sommelier of that particular restaurant, because hopefully if that person's any good, they know their cellar as well as anyone. Anyway, what you find out there a lot is people who don't know a lot about what they're talking about. When you find somebody who's great, they really make a big difference in a restaurant. And what we're finding a lot of, because there's a customer demand to have access to wine, people are building wine lists. Now, look, Mark and I do a lot of consulting, and this didn't start out as a plug, but it's going to wind up as one. If you want, I mean, people pay us a lot of money to put together a good wine list for them that's appropriate for their place, because if you're going to have the liquor salesman do it, it ain't going to be great. That liquor salesman has to move certain things, and that wine
salesman...
Well,
unfortunately, the motivations of one company, and frequently what will happen is one company will come in, and for those of you who don't understand our business, and they'll say, okay, use my wines, and I will write your wine list for you. But just like an insurance salesman who has to use his company's products, that is very limiting, number one. And number two, there are certain things that they get paid a higher commission on than other things.
And there are certain things that a lot of these wine salesmen have to sell. Mm-hmm. In other words, look, I know these four vintages are lousy, but we got to move them by the end of the year, or you don't get your bonus. Well, guess where they're going? They're going on the list that he writes for somebody else. He's got to sell them. Whereas Mark and I don't have to buy anything. But whether it's somebody...
It is better that way, I have
sure.
to say.
This is
terrible.
It's terrible. I'm not buying it. But when you buy in-house, when someone cares enough to put a wine list together that is well-chosen, I'm seeing more and more places that have somebody put together a wine list that's well-chosen. But what Mark and I do when we consult for a place is we then insist upon training the staff. Because at least one person on staff to be the point person, because... If you have a great list, but nobody on staff knows enough to talk about it or to help anybody through it, you really don't have a great list. You don't have a great program.
And it really doesn't take a long time. And Francis and I teach a wine course at the restaurant that's open to the public as well.
But if you want to take it, you can. Actually,
you really are doing a commercial
plug show. It is. Go to stageleft.com and you can find out about our wine course. Starts in January 15th.
But we really do this a lot with this wine course. And yes, it's open to the public. And yes, a lot of people who are interested in stocking their wine cellars or just learning more about wines or how to read a wine list or even just figure out what types of wines they particularly like and which ones they should avoid. But a lot of people in the industry take this, and we use it as a training tool in our restaurant to teach our own employees because, A, it's such a great tasting opportunity because a lot of the wines come from our list. But, B, we also try and have a counterpoint of some of the schlock that's out there. And tasting wines side by side like that, there is no better way to do it.
That brings up a good point about professional wine education. If you're in this business and you want to be a wine, be a sommelier, mm-hmm. If you're in the business and you're in or around New York or San Francisco, you get to taste a lot of wines. It's really hard if mm-hmm. you're in Sheboygan because there are, once you're in the business, a lot of professional tastings that are free, that you can go to tastings in the spring and the fall. 5 days a week before work,
you can taste 10,000 wines a year easily,
and at the and, you know at professional tastings. And if you can get yourself in a position, you don't even necessarily have to be the buyer that you can get invited to these tastings. And that is invaluable in getting a job. But I'll tell you something else. There's a misconception out there that Alpana Singh, who is the youngest woman ever to get the Master Sommelier degree, was also quoted in this article, and she says, I think that people get this romantic idea that we're going to sit here and drink Lafitte all day, Ms. Singh says. No, we're here to wait on people. And if you don't want to pick up silver and bust tables, then you don't want to be a sommelier.
That's absolutely correct.
I get emails all the time from guys who know a lot about wine. They either worked in retail or they've never worked in the wine business. They say, do you have any wine positions available in your restaurant? Yeah. But you better know how to bust tables.
Yep.
You know, there's nobody in a restaurant that is the wine guy who doesn't pick up silver, bus tables, run food, and run off.
If I'm at a table and you're done with your glass of wine, I take it away. I'm the owner of the restaurant.
More than that, if we need people to run food, mm-hmm. everybody's got to run food. There is no position, and this is something that you need to know about the sommelier in the restaurant. The sommelier in the restaurant has got to be, first, one of the best waiters in the mm-hmm. restaurant and have those skills and have that skill set, because the sommelier doesn't just know about wine and you know, all these great things about expensive vintages, et cetera, and so forth, and taste the wine. In a great organization, in any organization, the sommelier has to know what's going on at your table, has to be able to make sure things are right at your table, and has a position of authority on the floor of a restaurant. And that comes with years of experience that are aside from wine, that's where you start. And so I do get emails all the time from people saying, do you have a wine position available in your restaurant? I would say I get two a month. There are no wine positions in a restaurant unless you know how to work a restaurant floor.
Well, one of the things that's in the Asimov article is a quote from Daniel Johnson. I'll paraphrase, but it pretty much reads, you know, you really need to be a sensitive person who communicates well with people. And so you can have all the wine knowledge in your head in the world and know all about the history and from where it comes and every little detail about a wine. But if you can't communicate that and if you can't understand what your customer is looking for and get them that thing, then you are useless as a sommelier,
well,
no matter how
the,
much
the other form of sommelier that I find very often is the guy who just spouts off and spouts mm-hmm. off. And sometimes, you know what? I don't want to talk about wine.
Right, I'm not a date. Get away from my table.
Yeah, exactly it. Or I'm talking to you. Or we mm-hmm. were at a restaurant the other day. We were having a meeting. And the woman wouldn't go away.
Yep.
We were like, I don't want to talk about rare vintages or whatever. I'm having a meeting here. Would you just bring me a glass of wine and go away?
Did the pad of paper on the table not give it away?
Or my scowl. Did that not give it away?
Well, and you have quite a scowl.
We're going to stop talking about wine. We're going to talk about milk. We're going to talk about specifically raw milk, which is illegal in the state of New Jersey, but not in Pennsylvania. We're going to find out why in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Today our guest is Brian Snyder. Brian's the executive director of the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture. Their mission is to promote profitable farms which produce healthy food for people while respecting the natural environment. And we're going to talk about a range of things today, but we want to talk specifically with Brian about raw milk.
Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, man, so raw milk is illegal in several states, and by raw milk we mean milk that has not been pasteurized.
Including New Jersey.
Why is raw milk illegal in so many states?
Well, several several decades ago, there were serious health concerns, in particular tuberculosis and other diseases that were spread by the milk supply, particularly in big cities like New York City and Baltimore, Philadelphia.
So when you say several years ago, what exactly do you mean?
Well, I mean back in the early part of the 20th century.
So several, like 80, 100, a lot of years ago.
Yeah.
Was milk back in that time, was it truly a vector for disease?
Well, it carried disease at that time. And as we all know, food can kill you.
Mm-hmm.
It can carry disease, as we've recently seen with the spinach problem.
Right.
And milk is like that in that it can carry disease.
So
but whether it's inherently dangerous or not is a significant question that I think needs to be addressed.
Is pasteurized milk always safer than unpasteurized milk? Is pasteurized milk always less likely to carry disease?
Well, you know, much like any other food, you can make the milk safer by cooking it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what pasteurization is. So whether or not it's safe after that depends on how well it's been packaged and handled after the pasteurization. So it's probably safer in some respects in that once it's pasteurized and bottled, it doesn't get opened up again until it's on somebody's kitchen counter.
So let's talk about then why someone would prefer raw milk to pasteurized milk. Why wouldn't everybody just why is there this giant movement for raw milk?
Well, to say it's a giant movement might be a bit of a stretch.
Why is there 78 people in Pennsylvania who want raw milk?
Well, so it's between those two. most people who have tried raw milk or have even been raised on it understand inherently why it's good, and it's the taste.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an incredible taste that you don't get in a pasteurized product, and especially not in an ultra-pasteurized product, which is the more common milk that you would find in the store these days.
Well, I think that most people who've had raw milk, myself included, would tell you that it is a tastier milk, it is a richer milk, it is a more delicious milk, provided that shake it up yourself, because the milk, by not being pasteurized, is also not homogenized.
Sure.
Not all, the cream will separate to the top,
yeah,
as it is meant to do.
Well, so, but do you think that raw milk is almost as safe or is as safe as pasteurized milk these days?
I think that whether or not milk is safe depends on how it's handled and how it's produced.
Well, can we guarantee that raw milk can be handled well?
No. Well, you can't guarantee it, but you can provide a significant level of inspection,
mm-hmm,
just as we do with all other foods.
Well, so what are you doing in Pennsylvania to ensure that the raw milk supply is...
Well, in Pennsylvania we're lucky, and I like to say sometimes that in Pennsylvania we're ahead because we're behind. We never actually eliminated legal raw milk,
mm-hmm,
like other states, in particular New Jersey.
We can say New Jersey again, can't we?
Yeah, and Maryland is a state that is... And an awful lot of people from Jersey and Maryland come into Pennsylvania to buy it.
Now, is it just the huge corporate agribusiness concerns that are behind being against raw milk? Why are people against raw milk?
I think, it's easy to say that corporations cause all these problems, but the fact is all of us learned in third or fourth grade, the wonderful story about Louis Pasteur,
mm-hmm,
and how he... how he saved all the children by developing this pasteurization technique. Well, he wasn't really directly involved at that time when it was needed, but certainly pasteurization, when it came on the scene, was a major factor in making the milk supply more safe for people.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem was that milk was coming out of dairies that were not heavily inspected.
Yeah, I mean, we have other safeguards now that simply didn't exist at that time, at that period.
Absolutely.
And we have testing that exists that didn't exist back then. And we can look at our milk supply and we can inspect it. And we can take a look at the cows and the milk that comes from them and thereby have a greater insurance that are the milk from the raw milk from these cows can and should be better. And
well,
better for us.
I would say that that's true with one caveat, and that is that as long as you're going to gather all the milk into one spot and then distribute it all across the country, just like with spinach, that's still somewhat of a dangerous proposition.
Well, and that's another reason people are advocating raw milk, because raw milk usually comes from local farms. And
you either get it from a farm or what used to be around 30, 40 years ago, where a lot of local creameries that would collect milk just from a particular community or region of a state.
We're going to be back in just a moment talking more with Brian Snyder, the Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture, about raw milk. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights on 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. Today we're talking with Brian Snyder, the Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture, about raw milk.
Brian, you know, we were just talking a moment ago about the fact that one of the hazards of these large corporate agribusiness farms, one of the problems that happen is you have a couple of cows that have issue, or you have a batch of milk that has an issue. What happens at these large concerns? What happens there?
Well, as with any large food processing operation, you know, when you have a little bit of contamination, it can spread far and wide. And that's why it probably would never work to have raw milk through a mass distribution network.
Mm-hmm. Because one bad apple can spoil the whole bunch, yeah.
Yeah, and so necessarily raw milk can and should be done through local farms or small local or regional creameries.
You know, it's one of the reasons we have problems, and I'll use E. coli as an example, why you can spread E. coli through hamburger through a lot of to a lot of different places throughout the country, and it might be difficult to track. Well, if you're at a small farm and a cow or two cows or three cows are butchered at once, and you process those cows and you grind the meat from a cow from the cows, well, there's your hamburger meat. And if there's something wrong with one of your cows, well, or your cow, you can dispose of the meat. Well, at a lot of these larger concerns, these agribusiness plants, you can have the meat from as many as 200 cows in one hamburger.
That's right.
And that creates a lot of issues.
Sounds like a big hamburger, Mark. Sorry. That was just too easy.
But if one cow is sick then, or one cow has an issue, or E. coli has contaminated one small batch of meat, that can just continue to spread throughout the whole batch.
And then you take that batch and distribute it in hamburgers all across the country, and suddenly you have a nightmare like we did with spinach.
And, you know, if you live in New Jersey, we live, fortunately, close enough to Pennsylvania that I can get raw milk from Pennsylvania. If you want to figure out how, you know, go there and get it, or have a friend go and pick it up for us, there are groups of people that form all around that send one person to go and get it.
That's right.
And you can do that if you live in New Jersey, if you live near Pennsylvania.
That's perfectly legal. If you come into Pennsylvania, you can buy it from someone who has a permit and take it back home with you.
And I won't get arrested for crossing state lines?
Well, if you're speeding, you might.
With contraband milk?
If you want to find out more about this, you can go to the Weston A. Price Foundation. You can find out how to find out more about raw milk on our website, restaurantguysradio.com.
Brian, I want to talk to you about allergies when we come back.
We're going to go to the news, and we'll be back in just a moment talking more with Brian Snyder from the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture about raw milk. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Capital Lombardi Restaurants. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is Brian Snyder. He's the executive director of the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture. Pennsylvania is one of the few states in the union where raw milk is actually legal with some restrictions. The Association for Sustainable Agriculture's mission is to promote profitable farms which produce healthy food for people while respecting the natural environment. Now, Brian, we were talking about raw milk before the break, and I want to continue with that topic now.
So, Brian, now, I've heard tell, and I understand that it's true, that there are people out there who are allergic to pasteurized milk and are not allergic to raw milk.
Yes.
What are the reasons therein?
Well, you know, most foods contain enzymes that make them digestible.
Mm-hmm.
And so pasteurization, you know, in addition to taking out sometimes some bad things, like bad germs, it takes out good things.
Yeah, we had a guy by the name of Dr. Ron Schmid on the program a while ago, and he explained this, I thought, very, very well in his book.
The
Untold Story of Milk. That's exactly the one. And one of the things that happens when we drink raw milk, or actually, first of all, when we pasteurize, well, the enzymes that help us to digest the milk, well, when we pasteurize milk, the ones that are self-contained in the milk, well, they die off at about 140 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
For pasteurization to kill the pathogens, the things that we're trying to kill off in milk, well, they don't die off till about 150 degrees. So almost by definition, we've got to kill the enzymes in order to kill the bacteria.
Yeah, and if you really want to get angry, you could find out that pharmaceutical companies harvest those enzymes from the milk before pasteurization and then sell it to you as drops to put back in your milk.
Are you serious?
I was already angry.
That's my understanding. I mean, where else would they get that?
Sure.
And, it's ludicrous that you have to then sort of doctor up the milk to make it
digestible.
Well, and what is it? Why do we add vitamin D to milk? Do you know?
Well, vitamin D is obviously an important vitamin for human health, particularly when we spend more time indoors than out. But when cows spend more time indoors than out, too, you have to put the vitamin D in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so vitamin D would naturally occur in cows that are outside, but indoor confinement animal feeding operation cows from which most non-organic milk
that
comes
don't
from,
see the sun.
They don't get the sun, so the vitamin D is not in the milk, so we add it.
Well, I don't understand all of the science behind that, but certainly there is some of that. I don't have any idea if the same amount of vitamin D would occur.
You know, you speak of the science of this, but the science behind this I find really fascinating, and I hope I don't bore anybody, but I just want to talk about it for a second.
I'm sorry.
Francis, I don't mind boring. Everybody else, I'm concerned
about
boring.
Go ahead.
But the science is really, really fascinating. What happens here is, these enzymes, they break down the protein in the milk into usable amino acids. That's what the enzymes do. When we break things down by other ways, rather than using enzymes, by acid or by putrefaction when things are left out or fermentation, we don't necessarily break down the proteins into usable pieces where our body can then reassemble them and use them for good reasons. And so what happens is your body reacts to pasteurized milk and by these broken proteins which are not easily reassembled, your body reacts to them as if there's something wrong with them, as opposed to them being a food that they can then, that your body can then reassemble and put back in and put to good use as a protein.
Yeah, one way you can look at it is that it's you're trying to ingest a dead food rather than a live food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talk to cheesemakers and they'll tell you that ultra pasteurized milk can't be used.
Right.
For make cheese. Yeah, because it's dead.
Right.
It's dead.
My dad gave me a really good analogy here. And, you know, if you think of your milk as when it comes into your body as a brick wall, well, there's two ways raw milk can be taken apart brick by brick, and then those bricks can be reused in order to build a new wall. Well, what we do when we pasteurize milk is we blow up the wall, so there's really no way to reassemble it as a new wall inside our bodies. And I just thought that was a really good analogy of what our bodies do with raw milk or have the ability to do with raw milk as opposed to pasteurized milk.
Well, and I'd say that in addition to pasteurization, modern homogenization also contributes to that problem.
Well, let's talk a little bit about homogenization, because I think that is also a big issue. There are people who say that is as big a problem as pasteurization.
Well, in fact, when you break up the fat globules into very small pieces, there are some that feel that is how milk fat becomes a problem in the bloodstream.
Well, and again, what's happening there is the milk fats are more easily absorbed into your body,
in homogenized
milk because they're broken into these small little parts, which normally your body would just pass through. But instead, you're over-absorbing some of the smaller fats.
Yeah, I mean, your body can process things, but at a certain speed.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you, with any kind of food processing, you know, you break things down, and your body has to take it at a much quicker pace, and sometimes can't handle it.
Hey, now, so let me ask you. I am a big fan of raw milk. Are there any people in Pennsylvania working against you? Are there people that work against the making raw milk available?
Well, I don't know that there's an organized effort to work against it. Certainly a couple of years ago, it looked like we were going to lose the permitting process.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody assumed that it was just around for the old-timers.
And about
how many permits are there for raw dairies in Pennsylvania?
Well, there's about 60 now.
And it's growing, right?
3 years ago, there were about 20.
Yeah.
So and we call that triple.
At that point, yeah. Well, that's, you know, a lot of that was done by us and other groups that are working on these issues here, Weston Price included, just getting the word out, because there's an awful lot of raw milk being consumed,
mm-hmm,
and being sold by farms even without permits.
Mm-hmm.
And by getting the word out and letting people know that we could lose this ability to get a permit and sell it legally, very many farms have signed up to get their permits, and that's helped us to be able to publicize the availability of the raw milk too, because you really can't advertise if you're not doing it legally.
Well, you know, I had the good fortune of my dad had we'll call it a gentleman's farm in upstate New York when I was a kid, and we lived directly across the street from a dairy farm. You know, but there was really nothing wrong with the dairy farmer from next door saying, "Here, have some milk for me." You know, he was doing things on the up and up. He was, you know, it was the early 80s, so there wasn't really a thing called organic farming.
Yeah.
But he was sustainably farming his property, and it was great. The milk was very, very special. Although I got to tell you, room temperature, a little bit gross for me. I'm sorry. Room temperature, not so bad. Cow temperature, very, very bad.
Well, how do you like your beer?
same. Now, let me
not
ask
cow
you,
temperature
we,
ever.
We've only got a minute, about a minute left, but I want to ask, are there movements in some of the states that currently prohibit raw milk sales to start to allow it?
Absolutely. And, in fact, states like Ohio and Michigan, there are active movements, and there has been some resistance from the governments in those states.
How do people get involved if they would like to see raw milk, like say in New Jersey, where we want to see raw milk available legally in this state? How do we come together? What organization is it? Just the Weston Price Foundation?
Well, the Weston Price Foundation is across the country. Certainly, here in Pennsylvania, I've been called into Maryland and New Jersey and New York at times to talk about raw milk. And sometimes it's just getting the word out. Sometimes it's just letting your Department of Agriculture know that so many people are driving across the border to get their milk next door.
Well, we'll be sure and contact Charles Cooperus regarding
that. I just met him a couple weeks ago, so I think he's the problem. he asked me about this issue.
And he's the secretary, for our listeners, he's the Secretary of Agriculture in the state of New Jersey.
And he's about to get a phone call from the restaurant.
Yes. Yeah.
Genuinely interested.
Well, we're going to put you all in touch with Brian Snyder from the Pennsylvania Association for Sustainable Agriculture. That's passivefarming.org. You can find out more about raw milk in our state and in states across the country on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. Hey, Brian, thanks for being
on the
show.
My pleasure.
Super. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Floors, walls, and lighting. The Restaurant Guys learned long ago that the key to making a space look great are floors, walls, and lighting. There's no tougher test to a carpet than a busy restaurant. From design to installation to cleaning, the Gillespie Group has handled the Restaurant Guys restaurant floors for more than 10 years. Designers know what looks great on the first day. Bob Gillespie knows what will continue to look great year after year. Gillespie doesn't just install carpets. Their quality clean division has experience and expertise to keep that carpet looking great. In our business, it's the details that matter. In your home or office, the details make a lasting impression. The Gillespie Group handles projects from large hotels to offices right down to your living room. Look down. Go on, look down. Right there by your feet. You see. You need the Gillespie Group. Call them at 732-254-5508 or visit them at thegillespiegroup.com. Tell them the Restaurant Guys sent you and get a free cleaning with any installation. Remember, it's Gillespie for carpet and flooring, 732-254-5508.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, of Stage Left in Cafe Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick.
So, Francis, earlier in the show, we were talking about raw milk and the benefits of raw milk you know, some of the
got a funny story.
I do have a little bit.
No,
of
No, no, I got one right before yours.
Go ahead, fire away.
was riding my motorcycle up. This is a few years back, and I was up in upstate New York, and we weren't in good restaurant country. And I was with my friend Greg, the vegetarian who rides Harley Davidsons with me sometime. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes, I do.
Greg is a finicky eater.
Finicky is not the right
word.
But
a good eater, and he's the most fun to hang out with in the whole world. And we had our bikes up in upstate New York somewhere. We stayed in some campground overnight. It was great. And he brought me to this restaurant that was actually pretty good. It was crunchy granola, but it wasn't vegetarian. And
crunchy granola with meat?
There were parts of it that were good, but it was really out in the middle of nowhere. And I ordered tuna tartare. Now, tuna tartare is raw. It's raw tuna chopped up with, you can put different things in it, sometimes soy, sometimes mustard, herbs, onions, and it's served like chopped, and it's usually done to order, you know. And so they had tuna tartare, and I ordered the tuna tartare. And tartare, the definition of tartare is raw, right? So they bring me over these three little tuna meatballs. that have been cooked.
I understood that when you said meatballs.
Yeah, yeah. And I sort of looked at it for a moment, and she said, "Okay, enjoy, guys." And I said, "Excuse me.
Could you get back for a second?"
"Excuse me. This tuna tartare is cooked." And she said, "Yes, sir." I said, "Okay, that's a sign." Disgusting.
You know, I'm always amazed.
Some things are better raw.
I'm always amazed at, you know, I remember you and I went to a restaurant in New Brunswick, which no longer exists, and I ordered a tuna burger because I just couldn't figure out what a tuna burger was, and it just piqued my curiosity.
And when you were done, you couldn't figure out why.
And what that tuna burger was, and I'll bet it was very much like your tuna meatballs. It was like chopped tuna, chopped like hamburger meat, your meatball, I'm sure.
Yep.
And then, you know, made into a burger, and then cooked and made into, it was awful.
Now, why would you go and do that? I'm sorry, you were going to go somewhere else at the beginning.
No, it was just awful. But you know, the restaurants make some dramatic mistakes sometimes. And I think it's just a matter of, isn't there somebody to say, "Oh, don't do that"?
Yeah.
Every restaurant should have one guy whose job it is to say, "Oh, don't do that.
You don't
want to do that." So seriously, Francis, the story I started, not even a story, the thing I started to tell you earlier, I believe that it is our job, that inherently our job as great restaurant owners, and even more so now that we have a radio show, is to find the best of category of anything that we can ever possibly find. Tuna burgers, worst of category.
Yeah.
But the other day, I went to a local ice cream shop, and I had what was the greatest milkshake of my life. And I'm going to give the local place a little plug right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place called Thomas Sweets, and actually they have a couple of satellites throughout
the
state.
They have one in Princeton. And mm-hmm.
But this one is in the ones in New Brunswick that Rutgers people have been going to forever. Thomas Sweets made a bittersweet chocolate ice cream. And from that bittersweet chocolate ice cream, my wife came back from the doctor. She had slipped a disc, so she wasn't feeling so great. And ouch, for sure. And so to cheer her up, chocolate malted has always been the way to go. But they had this special ice cream, this bittersweet chocolate ice cream, that we had had them make a double thick chocolate shake with the bittersweet chocolate ice cream, a little malted mixture in there. I'm going to tell you, easily, okay, easily the best chocolate shake of my life.
It's too bad it's radio because they can't see me looking at you mesmerized.
Yeah, I have a pretty good idea of where we're going at 12 o'clock today on the way back to the restaurant. A very important part of our job, and it's really important, is to find those things. That's searching out the best ingredient or even the best finished product. It is... First of all, I think it's one of the things that I find the most enjoyable about my job. But when you find that holy grail, whether it's the milkshake or the cheeseburger or the foie gras or whatever it is, that is so rewarding and you know, feels so good. But the taste of this chocolate milkshake, okay, I was high for 2 hours from having found the greatest milkshake
in the world. You don't need drugs, kids.
You just need the greatest chocolate malted in the world.
Chocolate malted in the world.
But seriously, Thomas Sweets, and you know, we've been going to Thomas Sweets since the dawn of time. And just so you know how it lines up here in New Brunswick, there's Thomas Sweets, which is next to Cluck U Chicken, which would be the first kitchen that I ever worked in, which is next to Stuff Your Face, the first kitchen that Mario Batali ever worked in. So it is quite a little row of, well,
second rate
restaurant type things. Thomas Sweets I wouldn't call second
no,
rate.
No, I'm sorry.
I really wouldn't. I think it's
was referring to the other.
It's a great show. The other places are, well, places that you should get your start and maybe not get your middle, kind of thing,
as far as
your careers go.
Anything beyond your start. Just don't hire anybody. You're probably going to get sued from that. Anyway, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1155. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Capitol Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick.
You know, so often, we were just talking about, you know, one of the jobs that we have as great restaurateurs is to find the best of category, and whether we're diners and radio hosts and trying to find that in someplace else, we're trying to find those ingredients in order to use them in our own place. But so often, and I think where so many restaurants go wrong, is they take that middle ground. They take that middle of the road, that safe spot. You know, I watched, you know, as you guys know, anybody listens to the show, one of my favorite shows this week, or last week it was, Top Chef. And on Top Chef, one of the things that Colicchio really starts riding the Top Chefs about.
Tom Colicchio is the host,
the head judge,
and also an executive chef in his own right, and a damn good one.
But one of the things that he is riding the chefs about is, instead of trying to make the best at what they can make, to be the top chef, they're all trying to stay kind of in the middle, to stay in the background, and to not be eliminated from the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it really interesting that a lot of the restaurants I go to, I kind of feel like they're trying to not be eliminated. They're trying to just kind of do nothing wrong, and there isn't the focus on being great or doing it right. And that's, you know, it's disconcerting to me. I hope that trend kind of turns around. And
I think that's always the way that people get, though, especially when you're in an industry where 60% of businesses are out by year two. You know, 60% of startup restaurants are out of business in year two. And so there is a certain amount of just trying to stay alive. But
just
frankly,
don't mess it up, otherwise is no way to go.
But frankly, the change will always beat you in that. The big change will always beat you in delivering the mediocre product.
Right.
They'll always be able to do it cheaper, more efficiently, and they'll make more money at it.
10,000 times in a row the same way.
And they have a big TV TV advertising budget. If mm-hmm. you're an independent restaurant, you got to do something on your own, which is
something
why
special.
We, for example, or just something that stands out on our own. No chain restaurant would put as much garlic in their tomato sauce as we put in
right.
Catherine Lombardi, because we're like, this is the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like it, then this isn't the restaurant for you. But this is our view of this food. And, you know, if we were a national chain, our corporate marketing experts would tell us to tone down the garlic.
Yes, that's our corporate marketing experts tell us that now.
Final plug for Catherine Lombardi Restaurant. I hope you've enjoyed the hour. We're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.